And again, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I remind you, by the way, we are on SoundCloud and Facebook. And I, again, I'll remind you that on this coming Friday the 19th, there is going to be a Zoom meeting examining the issue of Uyghurs in Xinjiang, and Max Blumenthal is one of the people speaking there, and the consul, a Chinese consul from Calgary, is to be part of it. Go to hcsw.ca for all the details. Phil, I think we could tie in my previous comments about Paul Roos's Abegina and the lessons of the Rwanda business, because you sent me an item. Thank you very much. I hadn't seen it, but by the CBC, in which General Dallaire, who is known to Canadians in association with Rwanda, that is his main identifier. People say, well, you say Rwanda, if you're, and people in Canada, they say General Dallaire. So Phil, you saw that item, and you want to say what it was?
Well, yes, it was, I don't know why the CBC considers whatever he says, he's a retired gentleman, to be so newsworthy, but he expressed opinions. The CBC had an odd little take here. It says, retired Lieutenant General Dallaire is urging the Canadian government to act in response to the, quote, genocide being committed by the Chinese government. And I don't know why those quote marks were there, although maybe somebody at the CBC is beginning to wonder, well, you know, maybe we should, you know, hedge our bets on this a little bit. But Dallaire, who of course has no expertise on China whatsoever, he's not known to have studied on it or commented on it. So he's quoted as saying, when there are massive abuses of human rights by a state, we all have the responsibility to go in and protect them. Hey, we signed up.
Can I stop you right there?
Yeah.
Because that really gets me, that one.
Yeah. Yes.
Read that again.
When there is a massive abuse of human rights by a state, we all have the responsibility to go in and protect Whoa. Them. Yeah. There you go. There, General, lead us off to war now. Let's.
Now it continues. We signed up to it.
We signed up to it. The world signed up to it, Dallaire said in an interview with CBC News Network's Power and Politics.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, then it says he led the peacekeeping mission. And he says there are many avenues Canada and the famous international community could pursue to respond to China's actions, adding that the use of force must be a last resort, although it's the only action he mentions.
Well, I'd like to know what we have to go in to. We have a responsibility to go in.
Go in, yeah.
Go in,
yeah.
And protect them.
Yeah.
We just have to underline this, because this is what made my hair stand on end when Joe Biden said last January, I think it was, he's about, during the campaign, talking about the COVID crisis in China, China's involvement, or, you know, but when they were demonizing China on, oh, this, you had this racist term Trump was throwing around. And Biden said, well, we have to have our own people, not the World Health Organization, our own, he says, you know, Americans, have to go in there and find out what's going on. Now that, and this is echoed out of the mouth of Dallaire, but actually I think you could say this across the board in Canada, Britain, France, anywhere you have the old colonial gang, and they will say they have the right to go in places. And indeed it's, he loves this term, responsibility. But this is really a dangerous matter. I'm really glad that you called everybody's attention, our attention to it, because, see, we all hoped and believed that that kind of thinking was being shunted aside, because it's called Chapter 7 at the United Nations on the when the United Nations decides to take up an issue of this type, and they decide that there's a war setting, and at the UN, we're talking about the United Nations, by the way, it's very curious that the general is starting to actually blur this a bit. But it's the United Nations, if they make a determination that there is a threat to the lives of civilians, that a fighting is out of control, they offer services, UN peacekeeping services. But out of the peacekeeping of Rwanda, where Dallaire was part of a massive failure, he wasn't the reason it failed, but he was part of why they failed. There were many others, but it was a failure. And they did that under what they call Chapter 6. And Chapter 6 says that when a force is allowed by the parties to enter a country where there's combat, their job under Chapter 6 is to, first of all, establish that there is a ceasefire and that the parties are talking to resolve the violence and prevent war, further war. So that was the mandate under which General Dallaire happened to find himself in Rwanda. Of course, NATO wanted him there because he's a NATO officer. They knew that, you know, because that gave them a piece of the action. So that's just Chapter 6. But then they all fell in love with the idea that, well, the lesson they decided of Rwanda was that not to stop at Chapter 6, move to Chapter 7. And Chapter 7 is not peacekeeping. Chapter 7 is peacemaking, which is you bring the force and you make the peace. And then you see, you do your good deed after you've done that. The Canada and the United States pushed the idea of Chapter 7, and it enjoyed a little false spring, I guess you could call it, kind of like March, Beware the Ides of March, where it was thought to be a good idea. But now, as it's been unfolding, that concept of intervening, humanitarian intervention, has been exposed as really just an instrument of imperialist intervention. Most notably, in the case of Libya, where they destroyed a developing, relatively wealthy African and Arab economy, a government that was independent and was also very good friends of developing countries, highly thought of most particularly in South Africa, if people will remember. But at any rate, they destroyed it. And it was all because they were invoking the language. They didn't use the term Chapter 7. They simply used that concept of humanitarian intervention. And Dallaire has always been one of the faces of that. I think that really Dallaire ought to be walked back and asked to just account for his own problems and missteps and blunders of the United Nations. Never mind Chapter 6 and never mind Chapter 7, how they created a mess in Rwanda. And that should be his focus. He's called a general, and I know that really works. People love the word general. They don't know that Dallaire did not command Canadian troops in Rwanda. There was a handful of Canadian troops. The troops were provided by Tunisia, Bangladesh, Ghana, and then the one big boy on the block, the Belgians, which was about as stupid idea as anybody could dream of. Belgium, being the former colonial power of Rwanda, got aboard to be part of the operation in Rwanda, which would mean it's going to have a disastrous outcome, because the Belgians couldn't keep their hands off making sure that everything in Rwanda went the way they wanted it to go. And the other NATO countries all smiled behind their veils because they knew that was going on. At any rate, we're talking about Dallaire, we're talking about China, the Uyghurs. And as Phil, you point out, they're a little cagey here. They're trying to use dirty, libelous, smearing, demonizing language on China, at the same time hedging their bets a bit. That's why they put quotes sometimes around this word. You know, that we had the vote in parliament. We've talked about it on the Taylor Report. They had the vote in parliament. The government did not vote. So they could, you know, with a straight face, say to the People's Republic of China, that was a vote of parliament and our government didn't participate in the vote, but you see, that's an expression of our parliament. Yes, it's a face of a three-year-old in a sandbox, but don't mind about that. That's the Canadian parliament. And they, being the Canadian parliament, knew it wasn't of any great significance.
Phil, if I could comment, one of the things that strikes me is how really the press in this country is completely off the job. Because somebody should ask, if you asked an ordinary MP who voted for that resolution, and I have a number in mind that I'd like to ask, what do you see as the end game here? What's going to be the end of this road that you want to go down, where you start saying that China is committing genocide? You know, do you want to have a war with China? Is that what you're thinking about? Do you think that we would do well? Do you think that our life would be better here if we had a war with China? I would love to be able to put a question like that to an MP. But of course, there's no opportunity to.
No, and their answer to you, unfortunately, brings us back to this dangerous business of using that word genocide. Yes. I'm glad you raised it in that way because, frankly, it strikes me it's a tactic that if you use that word, obviously you are opening the door to violence, and your claim is going to be, I had to do that because I was fighting an evil force, and we all agreed. And how do you dare not use force? How do you dare not do your duty, your moral duty? And so it's a pretext for violence, to use that word. And it should be called out for what it is, because something else has happened here that I noticed. On the one hand, they're promoting this narrative, which is a lie, that the Uyghurs are victims of genocide and any such thing. The Uyghur population is growing in China. Their income is growing. Their access to all the modern things that anybody would want has increased. It's a relatively poor region of China, and they are part of this program that China has to develop all of China, not simply the wealthier areas or the ones with access to ports and big cities. They have the population autonomous region of 25 million people it was relatively poor. Every nation on earth has areas which are poor or certainly not enjoying the same standard of life as others. And the Chinese have worked very hard to bring the standard of living up. And we should be congratulating China. We should be actually in trumpeting what can be done to eliminate absolute poverty, and to make education, medicine, all those things available, can be done. Also, particularly, and Phil, this is apropos of you, you're a former railroad man, bringing them transportation, getting people from one place to another, that's one of the greatest things you can give any people, is, you know, here we have, for example, the American Northwest. It's very hard to get a plane that'll take you to the Dakotas. You have to change planes three or four times to get to the Dakotas. the rail service is poor. I doubt that even Greyhound is getting the job done.
Well, Greyhound barely exists anymore. I saw a comparison last week, and it was comparing Chicago to Boston and a similar distance in China. And I think it was Shanghai to Xi'an or something like that, right? They said you can do it by Amtrak on one train a day, which takes 21 hours. And you can do it in China on a fast train that'll do it in 4 hours, yeah. Which fast train didn't exist 10 years ago. I have to say, you do mention I'm a former railroad man. I got to say that the years I spent on the railroad, we always had anxiety that we wouldn't have a job because we wondered if the railroad was just going to shut its doors someday and there wouldn't be one anymore. And in China, this very superior form of transportation, they've been building so many of them and they build them so quickly. And they have these fast trains. And I have to say that these fast trains have been talked about in North America since the late 1980s, and not one of them has been built. They started one in California. I think they laid like 10% of the track bed.
Merced to Bakersfield, I think.
Yeah, Merced to Bakersfield, that's right.
Nobody could think of a reason to go from Merced to Bakersfield. And then, but they said it might take 10 years.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It'll take more, yeah.
First of all, the lobbyists have to be paid off.
Right, right.
The insurance companies have to be paid off. And the rest of it goes to wherever, I guess, offshore somewhere. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor with Phil Conlon. And you give me an excuse, Phil, to say something that I want to ask you about this, too. Here's a fact. 894 high-speed trains pass through Guangzhou South Railway Station every day. 894 high-speed trains pass through Guangzhou. And how many fast trains did you say we have?
Zero. Zero.
High-speed, and those are really high-speed trains.
They're very fast. Yeah. If it went off the rail, it would be catastrophic, and yet it doesn't happen. So I think that they put safety as a very important component in the design and in the engineering.
Yeah.
And they must inspect that track like nobody's business because, you know, the railroads don't, you know, you've got to keep them up to date, right? You've got to do your maintenance. A quantity of trains like that in a day?
I would tell people who want to know, well, how can this be done? In one way, it's simple. The other, it is impossible. The answer is you have to have a people's republic. And we don't have
right.
a people's republic. We have monopolies. We have private ownership. We have politicians who make decisions on what will be built or not built based on which lobby has the most influence with them and guarantees them a future income on another area. But
well, yeah, by the way, Phil, we should just mention Toronto. It's taken us 20 years to bring transportation to the people of Scarborough, and we're no closer to doing it now. Actually, we're getting further behind than we were 20 years ago. I'd like to just see the Toronto City Council subcontract out the capital program for transit in Toronto to Chinese engineers for 5 years. And let them do it, right? Of course, they would never do that.
Just to loop back before we close out on this subject, I want to go back to the point that we were on a humanitarian intervention. Yeah. The U.S. has removed the East Turkestan Independence Movement from the terrorist list. This, they combined with the invocation in another area, and the two are never linked. But they have decided to accuse, this is the State Department, Joe Biden's administration and Trump's, and it began with Pompeo. They begin by saying there's genocide. And then they say they have decided to remove the East Turkestan Independence Movement from the terrorist list. The East Turkestan Independence Movement is on the United Nations Security Council list of terrorists. It has not been removed. And for anybody who didn't know it, horrific acts of terror were carried out in the Uyghur Autonomous Region. Horrific attacks, which is one of the reasons that we had a real focus by the central government of China to put a stop to that terrorism, because you're supposed to protect citizens from terrorism, and they've done it. But also, they don't believe in doing it with military alone or police alone. They believe in doing it by giving people opportunities and education and making it so that it's not a military matter, it's a social matter. And when it's completed, and it's like fighting the virus, it's gone. So, but the US is committed to using the word genocide so as to justify terrorism. That's the game. And Canada is joining in with that. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back.